Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Nine of them, nine quotes, and what they might mean or what they interpret them a little bit. But before I get to those nine, we did have John Morant yesterday on social media. So while we're interpreting quotes, he says, "Be careful what you wish for."
Some classic John cryptic quote where you could read absolutely anything in the world into that you want to read into it. It could be about anything. I don't know.
It could be about Dame Lillard choosing to go leave Portland someday, right? Like it could be about that.
Yeah.
But isn't the logical thing to say that it's about people who are saying he should be traded or the big three should be broken up? Isn't that the logical speculation that it's about that? And, oh, you people want me out of here. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, most people who I've talked to or seen assume it's a reference to a Tim McMahon quote in a podcast that got circulated on social media, and John Morant sees that circulated on social media, and that is about the prospect of Ja being traded this summer.
Right. Yeah.
So that is the most common assumption that I've encountered on that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to yours, because I found the most – they're all interesting, but the most interesting one was a quote that I – even when I first heard it, I had no idea what it meant, and I could interpret it totally differently. And it's from Zach Kleiman. "I wish we could snap our fingers and have some gritty veteran wing. We're not one gritty veteran wing away from winning a championship."
Yeah, it was a personal affront to me is how I took it, because that's what I say they should basically try to do. There's sort of different ways to look at that. I just think, and I'm sort of an outlier on this, I just think the winning the championship thing is boilerplate to me. That's just not how I think about it or talk about it, but that's how you're supposed to think about it and talk about it, and so that's what he says. To me, what was interesting about it was it seemed to suggest, because the path of least resistance is just bringing the whole team back, but nobody thinks they should do that. Beyond that, the path of least resistance is like bringing it all back and trying to add a meaningful piece to it. And the most meaningful piece you could reasonably add to it would be a gritty veteran wing, right? And so for him to raise that path and then sort of knock it away, maybe I'm overinterpreting, which I might be, but that really raised my sort of antenna about, are they gonna do something bigger, you know, than that? And that's what I wonder about.
Yeah,
if they don't think the one supplementary piece is enough to quote unquote win a championship. Of course, I don't know like what they think they're going to do to put them in position to win a championship next season if it's not.
Well,
that.
That's it. First of all, a couple of things you were saying. I do think you joke that it's a personal affront to you,
right?
One thing we saw.
I used to be at someone else texted me said I also took offense to that.
Well, one thing we did see in his comments was a reflexive defensiveness about all kinds of things, right? We saw him say, some people said we should get younger. No one asked him about that.
When there's another performance that happens.
Yeah, that's what happens. Sure. I haven't been critical of it. It's just he brought that up he brought up the being younger without being asked about it. He brought up the gritty guy, the dogs, without being asked about it. And here he brought up the gritty wing. So I actually think he knows.
He was responding to criticism in the air, in the universe, not to criticism that had come at him in the room. Yes.
The second point that I like that you made is that, of course, the goal here isn't to win a championship.
Well, it is the goal, but it's a tautology. Of course, your goal is to win it. Everyone's right. goal is to win a championship.
The goal is to get right. better, and maybe right. the way to be better is to add a veteran yeah. wing, yeah. right? But then I was left with two interpretations, because I was in the one way you could say it meant we have to do some serious excavation here because we are not one wing away.
Right,
and
right, that's, right.
The other way is that it's sort of what we need to do here. We're one, not one winning away. I don't, my failure to get a wing is not, it absolves him from getting the wing right. or from having gotten the wing. And so it could mean,
well, he got him and it didn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah. Or whatever. Right. Not getting the wing this year at the trade deadline. And it, and says, we just still have to grow this team. We got to get Zach Edey to get better. And we have to, we
got
to water this team. Right. Yeah. Let water and let it grow. And then we'll add the wing away there, when we get to be one wing away.
I mean, there's something to that. The problem there is that if your idea is you're keeping it together, but you're not going to go all out to add the one piece because you're not one piece away, and so maybe it's going to take a couple years, blah, 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 that's rational. But Morant, Bane, and Jackson are now, they're going to be in their age 26, 27 seasons. It was 25, 26 this season. It'll be their age 26, 27 seasons next year and making like north of $100 million right. combined. And that's a low number because when Jared gets on his next deal, it's going to get a lot bigger than that. And that's when it is kind of like, you know, it is sort of now time. And if it's not now time to quote unquote win a championship, it's now time to be in the mix.
Right.
You
know? So, this is talk radio. So we do things like literally George and I each predicted whether who would be the coach and whether the big three would be back. And we sure. both in the end said Isla will be the coach. And our level of conviction of that was 7 out of 10. And the big three will not be back. And our level of conviction there was 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10, who knows? But I do think there are so many things that could.
I'm going to go higher and lower.
Really? So which would be your?
I'm going to go 8 on Isla will be the coach. Okay.
We said 7. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go 5 on. I really think it.
No, we said 1 and that we think it's a coin flip. In other words, 1 is our level of conviction that they won't be back. Our level is in our own personal prediction that he won't be that they won't be back is a little low because we don't have any idea. That's what the 1 meant to us.
Okay, I'm
what does the 5 mean to? Yeah, what's your
if the range is they will definitely all be together or one of them will be traded. Yeah. I'm sort of dead center on
right.
that.
Yeah, that's it. Basically, okay. That's where we are. We're right. sort of yeah. Our level of conviction that what I'm guessing is we have no idea. In the end, the things that could force the breakup are this right. One of them wanting out.
That's all. This is the NBA, and that is always a possibility.
The financial constraints.
The Dallas Mavericks traded Luka in part because they didn't want to give him the supermax, and so right. I mean, I love Jaren, but he's not Luka, right. and so sure.
And then branding, internal dynamic, whatever that. Well, that
just
thing
your
is,
sense that need to your make sense it that up. As right. you did with your head coach. Maybe you just decide, okay, this has run its course, and we need to shake it
there
up.
There you go.
That would be the
aren't those
the
three
third
things that yes. could sort of force this
yes.
apart?
Yes, a player says, I want out. It's time to shake it up from my perspective as a player. B, we don't feel like this works in terms of our team strategy going forward, based in part on the finances, but in part on the finances relative to the quality of the player, right? And then the three, like it's run its course. We need to shake it up. All three of those things could very possibly happen. And the fourth thing is like, no, we still believe in this. Let's keep it together and let's run it back and make it better. But he didn't pound right. the table and say that. Right.
Okay, so on the Isla, where your conviction is pretty high that he's going to be back, I thought one of the, I isolated some quotes here that sort of suggest that one was one we talked about yesterday was just Ja's enthusiasm for him.
Yeah,
was
I thought Ja went above and beyond when but he said it was exciting. He didn't need to say that.
Right. But I also thought, and you highlighted, and I'm trying to find it here, a Pippen quote about, I feel like Isla is a coach that instills confidence in me, trusts me. I feel like once he got the job, I kind of took off. It's a striking quote, goes on from there. It's a striking quote because he also raved about Taylor Jenkins, who saved his career and gave him a chance and all of that.
Right.
And then to say, I don't know, what did you make of that quote, and
well,
why do you...
if you go through the arc of the season with Scottie Pippen, I mean, there was a point mid-season where Ja's missing games, and Pippen at that point had started. Remember the game, they went back to Chicago, his first time in the United Center where his dad played. He started, Ja's out, he scores 30 in that game. His best game of his career. Well, even at some point after that, even when Ja was not playing, Pippen was falling down the rotation. They were starting Kennard. Kennard had this period in the middle of the season where he was really popping. And Jenkins was leaning into Kennard Bane as his backcourt. Kennard is the third guard in that guard rotation. And it was after the – it may be these things are sort of – it may be accidental relation, right? It might be correlation, not causation. But after the coaching change, he did elevate back up, and you get to the playoffs, and, like, Pippen's starting with Morant and Bane, not just starting when Morant's out, right?
Right.
And he has these two big games. But it also relates to the style of play stuff where, you know, the idea of getting – of sort of, you know, propelling your small guards into attack mode, you know, off of these bigs kind of thing. The sort of philosophy that sort of applies to Morant, Edie, also sort of applies to Pippen too.
Right. So, but then you also make the point, which I thought was really perceptive, was that the players that Kleiman highlighted or – showed real enthusiasm in the way that he talked about
voluntarily brought up. Right.
It was Edie. It was Pippen. Morant obviously came up anyway, but he was particularly enthusiastic about Morant and
Wells and Spencer.
Yeah. Well, that a lot of these guys, particularly in the case of Edie, Pippen, Morant, they flourished under Isola.
Right.
Another reason to think that Isola will be back.
Yeah, I really feel like, and we'll see with Morant. I think the team's preference is, you know, unless something changes, something external changes this, I think Morant will be back. I think Isola will be back. Edie is obviously going to be back because, like, he's the second year in a rookie deal. And I think the sort of core function of the team, I'm not necessarily saying these are not going to be your two highest scorers or your two best players or whatever. But the core function that, like, sort of the energy core of the team sounds like it's going to be Morant-Edie interaction, Isola directing that, and things are going to sort of vibrate or the heat's going to come off of that into other places, you know? Which makes it interesting to think about in terms of Bane and in terms of Jaren, who are better players than Zach Edie.
Well, and Jaren, you highlighted a quote where he talked about adaptability.
Yeah. And I think that is the story of Jaren. And that is, you know, you can sort of do a strength-weakness counterbalance thing. He's not as good of a scorer as he's become. He has not been the, like, give me the ball, get out of the way, I'm taking over the team, this is my team guy. And you could think about that in a negative sense of, like, you know, where's the dog in you, you know, to say give me the ball and get out of the way. But he is a total player. He's a player who's good on ball and off ball, offense and defense. He can be the guy who's the leading scorer in the game. He can be the guy who just does a lot of stuff and sort of is a glue guy. He can do all this kind of stuff. And so, like, the best way to deploy him is sort of in a team context is something for a coach to decide. But to me, it's sort of interesting because it relates to his willingness to be adaptable and take on different roles. But it also relates to the question of, like, what you're going to spend on him relative to the role he's going to have on your team, right? And so if he's going to be sort of secondary to your core action, are you going to give him $350 million if he makes all NBA? There's a lot of questions there.
It wasn't a quote that you highlighted, but he was, I gather, quite enthusiastic about the idea of staying in Memphis, or said, like,
yeah,
more,
I mean,
than just the rote.
You had to push him
say
a few times, and he didn't really want to talk about the contract stuff. But when it got turned to, well, what, you know, what do you think about being in Memphis? And he basically said, you know, he was asked, like, is it important to stay in Memphis? And he said, absolutely, or something like that. Right. And then he had my favorite quote of the day where he said, you know, I live here. This is where home is. I'm about to go home in a couple minutes. That sounds great. And I said, I thought, that does sound great, Jared. I also want to go home in a couple of minutes.
Did you go home or did you right there?
I went to Starbucks, which
you
is basically my home.
My second home, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he mentioned the gritty guys, and that was Edie, Pippen, Wells.
Cam Spencer, who is not on the roster.
Cam Spencer.
Not on the main roster. Although that's about to change, apparently.
Do you think they have real high hopes for Cam Spencer?
I think they have reasonable hopes for Cam Spencer in that I think he's going to be on the 15-man roster, and he will be in that, you know,
John Conchar role
where
I'm more mine or yours is John Conchar in the John Conchar
yeah,
role.
Right. Like, I don't think they're going to plan for Cam Spencer to be in their every night rotation, but I do think they're going to plan for him to be on the roster and be a guy you can turn to knock down a shot and, like, you know, give you a spark of emotion and that kind of thing. And so I think he's a viable player.
But as you pointed out, omitted from that list.
And he'll be cheap, presumably.
omitted from that list of gritty guys is the guy who a year ago would have absolutely been on anyone's list of gritty guys, which is Vince.
Yeah, he talked about Vince and Gigi in a separate answer, which was actually in response to one of my questions. But he didn't, and, you know, when people just start talking, like, you know, sometimes you forget to say right, something you yeah. wanted to say. I mean, I do this every totally, day on the radio, right?
He just categorized them here. He wasn't, yeah. It wasn't necessarily a slur upon Vince's name.
And so the Vince thing is interesting to me because he does have those qualities, clearly, even though he had sort of a down season. He also, like those guys, is on a really good contract with the team. And to me, like, he should be in the same bucket. The Gigi thing is a little bit more curious or interesting because contract wise, he's in that bucket, but you don't associate him with the gritty, like, you know, right. whatever. He also didn't bring up Aldama, and no one ever asked him about that. That was on my list of questions to ask him, and then time ran out before I could get to it. Who will likely be a restricted free agent if they extend a qualifying offer, blah blah blah. But does also is not the guy you think of as like the gritty tough guy. He's talented, but he's not that, you know.
In terms of Vince, though. What do you get the sense that they think, and what Vince, you, I gather Vince was asked and he attributed his relative ineffectiveness.
Yeah. I remember how the question was worded. It was something like, you know, last year you played this big role with all the stars out. And then this year, like the stars are back and it's harder to get into the mix and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he just said, honestly, it was just health. And I think I just think that's true. I think they were planning on him to play a big role and he had the health thing. I think, and I am now sort of out on an island a little bit with him, but I'm frankly comfortable with that island. I think the weather's great. I just think he's good. I just don't have any doubts that he's good. There's levels of good, but I just don't have any doubt that he's good. And I think that he got healthy enough by the end of the season, and you saw it in game 82, and I know that it's a game 82, and no one's playing their guys, but he played like 30 minutes, and he looked pretty good in that game against Dallas. And I thought, given the matchup situation with the athleticism on the perimeter of Oklahoma State and the guys you had missing, he just should have been in the rotation from the jump. And to me, he's a guy, if he's healthy enough, you just throw him on the floor and you just ignore a mistake or two and let it go. And I thought he was really good in game 4, and I think he should be in the mix going into next season.
On Santi, what are the decisions have to be made around Santi, and how do you see there wasn't much said about Santi at all? Was Santi literally never brought up? And
Santi himself spoke, but no, Santi was not brought up by Isolo or Kleiman. Right. And again, it was on my list of questions, but time runs out.
Yeah,
Santi is so the Grizzlies. He is not under a guaranteed contract next season. If the Grizzlies extend him a qualifying offer, which is you put a piece of paper in front of him that is for a set amount, and basically he a paper that he could sign and take that money if he wants to, and that makes him a restricted free agent. That gives the Grizzlies the right to match other teams' offers if they make that initial qualifying offer. Now, I think you could reach a deal with him before you even get to that point, which is why I say he could be a restricted free agent. I think what happens is he becomes a restricted free agent. And then he negotiates with the Grizzlies to see what kind of outside interest there is. I just think that they can't be just letting talent walk out the door. And whatever the issues are with him, he is talented, and you need talent, and you also need like tradable contracts, like a contract slot disappears. Right. And so I think they should bring him back unless he just gets some stupid offer. And like, who's he getting a stupid offer from? Because no one has cap space from Brooklyn. Are they going to offer him $25 million? I don't think they are.
It's one of the things that I think a lot of people people who follow the NBA certainly understand, but the people who casually follow the NBA don't understand is they think, we don't need Santi, we'll get another player who makes exactly what Santi makes.
Yeah, you can't.
And how does it work in the case of Santi?
Well, it varies team to team depending on what your total salary situation is.
Right, for the Grizzlies.
If you are under the salary cap, there's a line, there's a salary cap line, there's a luxury tax line that's higher than the salary cap line. Now, if you are under the salary cap line, and a player poof goes away, you have that money to spend.
Right.
If you're above the salary cap line, it doesn't work that way because it's not money you can't freely spend it if you're above the line. And so the Grizzlies are in a somewhat complicated situation with that this summer. They could be on different sides of different lines depending on the decisions they make. But it's not as simple as, you know, you could sign Santi for $15 million, or you could sign someone else for the $15 million. That is not how it works.
Right.
I'm just making up a number.
All right. I think the only other one, and we mentioned this yesterday, was Luke Kennard talked about Memphis in the past.
I think he knows he's not going to be back. I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect that that's probably been communicated with him. And frankly, like, I don't, like, I'm not opposed to that in Luke Kennard coming back, because I think, and with all due respect to Luke, who's a good guy, good player, I think the kind of player he is at this stage of his career, I mean, when a kind of player, I'm talking about positional as right. much as anything else. I think he's probably going to be in a minimum contract or something close to that in the league next season. And I think he's a perfectly fine player on that contract for any team in basketball. But I suspect the Grizzlies, it sort of run its course a little right. bit. They got Cam Spencer, who's a similar kind of player. And
what was the highlight of the Luke Kennard experience?
Well, he had a couple big nights. It's Houston soon after he came, where he had the night where he hit like 8 or 9 threes, right. and everyone was yelling, "Luke!" Yeah, right. Yeah, that was
where
fun.
That started. Yeah.